And we're live. Hey, it's the Catalyst Sessions. Once again, I'm Bill DeYoung, and welcome to another week of fun and frivolity. I got a very special guest, and I'm very proud to bring him to you tonight. So let me tell you all about him. Bob Hite spent 33 years in television journalism, 30 of them at WFLA, Channel 8, Tampa Bay's NBC affiliate. Between 1985 and his retirement in 2007, he was the evening news anchor and quite probably right there in your living room every weekday at 6 and 11. And Bob is a master communicator. I got to tell you this, his career on TV has been full of amazing adventures. From his time underwater in the Florida Keys aboard the Aquarius Undersea Research Station, which is a great one, and I will link to it when this video comes out tomorrow, to a stunning, unforgettable series of reports from the front lines in Iraq and Afghanistan. He is a TV legend, Tampa Bay. I wasn't living in St. Pete in the 80s anymore, but when we would come bring the grandkids down to bring to see their grandparents, my parents, seems like Bob and Gail Sarans were always on the TV. So kind of a ubiquitous presence. Let's say hello to Bob. Hi. Hello, sir.
Hi, Bill. Hi, everybody.
You're in Cape Coral? Is that where we're talking to you?
Yep.
How long have you been down there?
About 3.5 years.
It's nice down there. You're near Pine Island.
I am. I used to have a place on Pine Island in Matt Lachey.
Mm-hmm. So, but you do a lot of, you're still sailing and doing all the adventurous stuff that we're going to talk about here in a minute.
Yeah, I'm still shooting video and writing stories. In fact, I'm working on it was 20 years ago this year that Bill Clinton signed the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Act.
Yeah.
$10.5 billion worth. And I did a lot of stories back then on the Glades, obviously. And I want to revisit that and see how far we've come. It was supposed to be completed in about 20 years. Now the price tag's gone up to 16 plus billion. And they're talking about 50 years to complete the task. But
of course.
But you know, just appropriate to go back and see how much has been accomplished to date.
Oh, it's like, hey, Nixon, that cross Florida barge canal, how's that coming, buddy? Hey, Bob, here's the question I wrote down. I wanted to ask you the one essential thing that, and you're not broadcasting now, you're doing this independently, right? Let's make that clear.
I'm doing it under the auspices of a new internet platform called Peace Vision.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay. But the one thing that's propelled you forward all these years as a journalist, would you say it's curiosity? Just an insatiable curiosity. That's what I always felt like the writing that I did.
Well, it's curiosity. Also, photography and cinematography were my hobbies. I had my own dark room when I was 12. My dad.
Oh, I want to talk to you about your dad. For sure.
My dad put this thing in my hands when I was 13. And I never went back.
I had a brownie or an Instamatic.
No, this is a Bolex.
Wow.
And this is what he carried in his briefcase. He worked at CBS in New York and still has his name on it. Dad got his film for free from CBS, and they processed it for free from CBS. And he would occasionally shoot footage. He was an anchor man up there, but he was also a reporter. And he carried this around and knocked out some stories with it. And as a result of the free film and the free processing, little Bobby could make home movies in 16 millimeter.
Right.
They were silent. This hasn't got a mag stripe, a magnetic recording head in it. But it's
like little Stevie Spielberg, though. I think he had a camera when he was there.
I have quite a collection of very expensive bookends now. I've has been video cameras. In fact,
can we talk about your dad? Your mom was a broadcaster too, I understand, in a way. But your dad, very, very famous. He did all the, aside from early radio announcing, what I read was that he did a lot of the bumpers for CBS, the national stuff, including the Cronkite Evening News. And on YouTube, you can hear his voice. He lives on. Tell me about your dad. And was that kind of what, I want to do that too. Is that where that came from?
When I was a little kid, I thought everybody grew up to be in radio and then in TV.
Yeah.
Kind of ironically, dad was on TV in the late 40s. But we never had a TV until the early 50s because Dad was waiting for them to, you know, perfect the technology. We would go next door to the neighbor's house to watch Dad do GE commercials on the Fred Waring show and the Jackie Gleason show.
Wow.
Because that's what he was doing back then. And one of my first terrors watching television was when Betty Furness, you may have some idea who she was, but she was one of the spokesladies back in the day, and she was on What's My Line, I think. Betty Furness was selling this GE refrigerator, and she opened it up, and there was my little father inside the GE refrigerator.
Oh, that's creepy.
And she threw it to Dad, and Dad's talking, and then when Dad finishes his bit, she closes the refrigerator door. Now, we were all
nightmares about that later.
We were all taught in elementary school, never climb into an empty refrigerator, you know? And I got hysterical. And I had a great dislike for Betty Furness for a while until my mother explained to me it was just TV.
Well, as long as he didn't turn up in your refrigerator, that would be strange. You were in the Merchant Marines.
No, I wasn't. Well, I am a Merchant Marine because I have a 100-ton Coast Guard license. But
okay.
I was in the United States Marine Corps.
Were you a photojournalist in the Marines?
Yeah, my dad and that helped launch my career. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I knew how to make movies.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'd started as a kid with this little camera, but I learned under veteran Marine Corps combat correspondents and photographers. And because I idolized the craft. They were very happy to take the time to teach me as much as they could in the 2 years I was there.
So when you left the service, you went into broadcasting. And this is kind of the follow-up. I mean, was that...
My first job out of the Marines was at a radio station in WKFD in Wickford, Rhode Island. And it was owned by Lou Adler, who was the news director at WCBS News Radio 88, and a guy named Ron Hickman, they partners. And Dad, I would send my audition tape, well, not my audition tapes, the tapes that I did in the Marines to Dad, and he played them for his buddies at CBS and got me a job at WKFD. Huh. And when I got out of the Marines, I was on a Triumph Trophy motorcycle, 650 cc's. That's all I had in a sea bag. And I went to WKFD, and they were supposed to have found a place for me to live up there.
Yeah.
I was down to about $300 after I got out of the Corps. And it turns out they started looking for a place for me to live on the air, advertising it the morning that I arrived. So I ended up living on the couch there for a brief period of time. And when I got my first paycheck was far less than what they had promised me. I summarily quit, went back and got a job at my hometown radio station, where my take home was in fact $150 a week, unlike what I got at WKFD.
Well, it was 77 when you came down here. I believe you were at a station in Philadelphia, and you had some Florida in your background. I mean, your family had, it wasn't totally an old Florida. You tell me about that.
Well, it was in my blood. My grandparents homesteaded Manasota Key. They were one of the early residents of the south end of Manasota Key in Englewood on Lemon Bay. They had a beautiful little cement block house on Lemon Bay.
I lived there briefly for a while.
And every winter, my mother would take me out of school for a month with all my assignments and everything. And we'd get on the Silver Meteor train, the sleeper coach. God, I used to love traveling on those things. And we'd go down and visit Grandma and Grandpa in Englewood. And my grandpa was a ham radio operator, W4ZVD. And his ham shack was my classroom every day. And here I am in Florida. The Gulf of Mexico is just across the street. The bay is right behind my back.
Right.
And I would have to spend like 4 or 5 hours a day in grandpa's ham shack keeping up with my assignments. And what's funny is when I would get back to my elementary school in Greenwich, Connecticut, I'd be a month or two ahead of the class, and it would take me a month or two to fall far behind my class, which was pretty much my typical performance in school.
They didn't have the ham shack experience. No. when you audition, I guess you sent a tape, and when you got hired at WFLA. So I can imagine this is going to combine, going to Florida, which you knew and loved, is going to combine not only your vocation and your talent for doing what you do, but your cinematography skills, your love of sailing. I'm just thinking out loud here that going to Florida, I'll take that job. That's a no-brainer.
That job came to me. I didn't come to that job.
Really? Yeah.
I'd gone into work that day. It was dead of winter. Yeah. There was a blizzard going on.
Nice.
And I had a trench coat with no liner. I had no gloves. I had no hat, and I had no boots. And at 4:45, they say, "Bob, we want you to go live from the Schuylkill Expressway." They had just gotten this live capability. And okay. And so I got in this, our first live truck, and at the time, our only live truck.
This is in Philly.
Pardon me?
This is in Philly we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
this is in Philly, and it's February in Philly in a blizzard, and there was a Schuylkill Expressway was built in back in the 30s, and it's got two lanes one way, concrete in the middle, two lanes going the other way, and right at the bottom of the road that my TV station is on, it spreads out, and there's a little green grassy park there, and we parked in the grass in between the cars going that way and the cars coming this way, and my photographer who was driving, who was Hank Brown, who, by the way, was the guy who ended up shooting President Reagan getting shot in Washington several years later, just one of his claims to fame.
Shot the footage.
Yeah, shot the footage.
Let's be clear. Right. Yes.
And he thought, "I've got a great idea. We're going to put you out." Well, obviously, I'm going to be standing there in the snow, you know, reporter involvement.
Yeah.
And he goes to the back of the van and is shooting from there, because had he shot from the driver's seat, you wouldn't get the perspective of the windshield wipers and all. And he's lighting me with the headlights. And they wanted me out there 15 minutes before airtime so the engineers back at the station could tweak everything.
Yeah.
So I'm standing out there freezing with wet, sloshy snow falling on me. My feet are in slosh. My hands, I'm holding onto a 635 Sennheiser microphone with no gloves. And for 15 minutes, I do that. Then we go live. And the anchor man, Larry Kane, folks from Philly may remember him, throws it to Bob. I'm the lead story. I'm talking about how dreadful the driving conditions are. Don't drive. You don't have to, blah, blah, blah. I throw it back to Larry. Thank God that experience is over. Now I go to get in the truck and, oh, no. They want to come back to you at the end of the A block. A newscast is the A block news. B block is news. C block is news. I've been out of the business so long, I forgot.
Sports,
D block is weather, or C block is weather, and D block is sports. Yeah. And then they come back to you for the end of the show, the kicker, usually an uplifting and lightning, a happy story.
Yeah.
And no, they want to come back to you to tease the B block. So they do. So anyway, I have to get in and out of this van. And in a period of 45 minutes, I spend about 35 minutes out in those conditions. Okay, show's over, go back to the station. I get out, I start up the heater in my little Toyota station wagon, go into the station to warm up, and the phone rings. Hello, Bob Hite? Yes? My name's Joe Maine. I'm a news director in Tampa. Would you be interested in working in Florida? Yes! Now, my mind flashes to my recent experience. My mind flashes to the Kinship, my boat, which is now down in the Chesapeake with 19 inches of ice encroaching upon it. And my family's down there. My mom and dad have retired down there. I have two sisters down there. And I could envision having my boat in my backyard instead of a 2.5-hour drive away in the Chesapeake Bay. And
no brainer.
And the guy said, "Really? When can you get here?" And I said, "Oh, probably not until around June." Now, mind you, it's February. What do you mean around June? I said, "Well, you see, my boat's got 19 inches of ice encroaching upon it. And the only reason why I would leave this job in the fourth market, where they've just offered me a new newscast of my own,
right,
to go to your market, the 18th market, for much less money, is my life pretty much revolves around this wooden boat. So long as I can do my hobby, which is what I do for a living. I don't care about the money so much as my lifestyle. And I
did they agree to that? See you in June. Pardon me? He'd agreed to that. We'll see you in June.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You sailed down from all the way down the seaboard.
I did. And with that Bolex, we were still shooting film in those days. And with that Bolex, I shot footage of our voyage. And every now and then we would put in to some port of call along the way, take the film to a Greyhound bus station. They would send it to Channel 8 where they would process it. And I had notes in the package and they would say, okay, here's what our new anchorman who's on his way here's how he's getting here.
Boy, the big buildup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what a great way to promote the new guy who's coming to station. And not just an anchorman, but an anchorman who had a 75-pound kedge, a 150-pound kedge, a 35-pound high tensile Danforth. I'm talking anchors that I come with, you know, real anchors.
Yeah. The anchor, our anchors are coming. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So let me follow with that though, because what I come to understand is that it was like when the bounty came, there was people there to greet you and flags and parades and marching bands. And here's our new guy. Was it literally like that?
No, not at all.
I thought it was.
What it was when I got to my dock.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd never seen my house. My wife, Patty, had found the house on the water in Apollo Beach with our new baby boy. Mm. And she'd had a friend sound the channel coming in there to be sure that there was enough water for me to get the Kinship, which drew 6 feet into the place. And we just barely made it over the hump. But in any case, we got there and I'm coming up to the dock, and the dock is a little two PVC pilings holding a little floating thing. And there at the back of the house is photographer Bob South and some really cute gal named Gail Sarens cover my arrival.
With Bob and Gail. Okay.
And my wife and baby and some other friends from the neighborhood. But that was my reception. But the best part, another part of the story is while they're rolling, Bob gets a phone call. South says, they want you at the station. I said, what? Yeah, they want you to do a cut-in news tease. Okay. Most of my clothes were already there. So I go into the station, and in the general manager's office is the GM, the sales manager, the news director are all there to watch the 30-second debut of this new guy that just sailed into town. And in the studio, there's, an on-air light, and there's a rehearsal light, and there's a monitor over here, and I'm all set to go, and I see the rehearsal light come on, but I see myself on the monitor. So, Bill, I look right into the lens of the camera and say, why do I see myself on TV? There's a rehearsal light on. Well, years ago, at some point, the rehearsal light and the on-air light got twisted, the wires, and everybody knew when it said rehearsal, it was on air. And when it was on air, it was rehearsal.
Oh, but they told the new guy.
Yeah. So can you imagine the reaction of when this big time guy from Philadelphia, Fourth Market, comes down and goes, why do I see myself on TV?
Can we cancel his contract? Is it
too late? They didn't have contracts at Channel 8 in those days.
Oh yeah.
I wouldn't take the job without a contract. So my contract was the letter of agreement I wrote for 1 year's employment. Mm.
Didn't you start out as an investigative reporter purely? Were you anchor right away? I know you did. You always did these investigative things. And thinking about the times, Bob, was the Skyway collapse in 1980, was that maybe one of the first major things that you covered? I would imagine, I know what you did later and I want to talk about that, but I can imagine those early days when it happened, you probably went out there.
I anchored the news live from the Skyway the night of the disaster.
Wow.
Yeah. And as you know, a friend of mine died in that disaster.
You knew Michael Curtin. Yes, I watched your video tribute.
Yeah, he'd a neighbor of mine. For those who haven't seen the story or can't remember the story, I knew he worked for Greyhound, but I didn't know he drove a bus because to me, he was the artist and writer, published a lot of paperback novels, who lived down the street. And he found out later from his wife that the reason why he drove the bus was to get material for his books, which makes a lot of sense if you stop and think about it.
He didn't have that young Bob Hyde advantage of somebody developing his film for free. So he had to go out and buy the materials. Yeah, I really didn't know much about Michael and his family. I mean, God love him. When I was writing that book, they were among those who didn't want to talk to me, which I always understand in those circumstances. So I really didn't know that much about him. And watching your piece was very eye-opening. I wanted to talk, too, about the work that you did, which is exceptional. What we should tell, let me put myself on the screen here a minute. If you don't know that Bob did these amazing pieces where he not only would dive the Skyway as the new bridge, we still call it the new bridge, of course, was being constructed. He would dive and he would photograph. He would go down there and there are two stories that I'm thinking of. One is the one where you discovered the cracks in the main piers of the new bridge, which correct me if I'm wrong, but resulted in DOT making some, you brought it on the air and sort of said, look what I found. This is kind of messed up. And they made some changes, didn't they?
It resulted in the construction being shut down. It resulted in a congressional investigation. It resulted in an MIT backing up my findings because nobody could believe that there were cracks in the main piers holding up the Skyway Bridge. Yeah. And the problem with that is you got salt water coming to these two kind of look like inverted breakfast cereal bowls, but enormous with, 8-foot thick walls. But if you have cracks in those walls and you got salt water going through those cracks, we know what else is in concrete, rebar, steel rebar. Yeah. And granted, it was epoxy coated with guys with mops, but there are a lot of breaches in that epoxy. And if you've got corrosion going on in rebar, that rebar is going to grow and blow the concrete off. And as one of the PhDs at USF says in the piece, I said, well, what happens then? He says, well, the bridge falls down.
So we have you to thank.
And I have no idea what the status of that structure is today, because once the salt water's in there, there's not much you can do. They allegedly epoxy coated the exterior to stop the salt water flowing, but let's hope they did.
Can we talk about your piece called Passage to Panama? Which, I had the piece that I wrote about the history of the Bounty in St. Petersburg today, and I watched Passage to Panama. You took the trip across through the Caribbean, across the Gulf of Mexico to the entrance to the canal and went through the canal. It's fascinating stuff. And again, folks, if you're watching this later, I will link to these pieces of Bob's. That must have been great. You love the Bounty, and you can tell.
Yeah, that was the highlight, to this day, my favorite assignment of all time, because I grew up on boats and on sailboats, and I cherished every time I got to be on a tall ship. Mm-hmm. You know, with the ratlins, you could climb the rigging. And in fact, one summer when I was going to summer camp at Tabor Academy in Marion, Massachusetts, they had a boat called the Tabor Boy, which had a square solana. And I wore out two pair of sneakers sliding down the shrouds that hold the masts up.
Did you do that when you were on the Bounty too, wearing out your sneakers?
I didn't slide down the shrouds, but I climbed up. All the footage you see in that documentary from up in the rigging.
Yeah.
And out on the jib boom, which is the piece of wood that extends from the bowsprit.
Yeah.
Some 30 feet from the stem of the ship, the bow of the ship. That was all my footage.
It is a great piece of filmmaking, and it was 1982 or 83, if I'm not mistaken.
82.
It holds up now. The sort of spirit of adventure. It's actually informative, and it's also a lot of fun. And it must be interesting for those who were crewing in those days to maybe their families to look at that now.
It was a fabulous experience. My partner, John Bafar, and I on that voyage would sit outside the bulwarks, which is the basically the wall that comes up from the deck. And on a square rigger, you've got the shrouds coming down. And to give them more purchase, more leverage, they have these protrusions that extend from the side of the ship. They're called bulwarks, or they're called the channels.
Yeah.
And you could sit outside the wall, the bulwarks, with the ratlet dead eyes that hold the shroud lines, you know, here, having your beverage.
Right.
And watch the you know, the moon rise over the Gulf of Mexico, or the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico, as men and some women, I suppose, had done for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
On a tall ship. And I get goosebumps just thinking about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Listen, I can't go too much further without talking about, as I said in the intro, all those years that you spent at the anchor desk at WFLA, where you were. I told you the other day that when I was a kid, it was Arch Deal, who was when I'd be having dinner with my parents off in the other room. But for so many people of a generation, perhaps a bit younger than mine, you and Gail, they used to call it the Bob and Gail show. I wondered what your favorite memories of those years are, because you and Gail were out there together a long time, long productive time.
Well, all my memories of those years are favorite memories.
Mm.
First of all, telling stories with moving pictures was my hobby.
Yeah.
But you can't grow up in the Height family and not have a lot of ham in you. And so anchoring the news, while it's a serious job, that also satisfied the ham in me. And then the motion picture satisfied the creative guy in me. And working with Gail was...
there she is now.
Am likely. I'm sorry. As a professional, one would think I'd turn off my cell
phone. Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, let me turn it off now. Goodbye. Working with Gail was just a joy. And in fact, I was talking to her about a week ago, and we were reminiscing, and we were talking about her marriage, and I said, and I was at her wedding, and then at the after party, or whatever you call it, the reception. And yeah. I said, you know, Gail, I wasn't crying out of happiness for you. I was crying out of sorrow for me, because Mike had got you.
Oh, boy. Yeah. She had a secret crush on her all this
year. Of course. Who didn't? Who didn't?
I did. Hi, Gail. Love you.
Right.
But, you know, you were... It's that whole most trusted man in news thing, you know, and I don't want to, I know your family knew the Cronkites, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make comparisons, but there is some truth to that. If you're the local anchor man, people look to you every day. Just, okay, what's going on? It was a different era. Now, you kids, probably you younger kids don't remember that the local news was the thing. And Bob was the guy. You took that responsibility seriously, didn't you?
Oh, well, absolutely. My dad drove into my head, one thing you must be as a reporter is objective. Yeah. Regardless of your political persuasion, you must be objective. Now, 95% of the people on alleged newscasts, there's no objectivity. There's very few newscasts that are straight news. But what we did locally, and what every station, I think, in Tampa Bay and probably pretty much throughout the country does locally, is objectivity is the master. Uh-huh. I've never seen a local newscast where you could say, well, that's slanted to the left or slanted to the right, like Fox or CNN or MSNBC or what have you.
Oh, sure. So, we can talk about this all night. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, first master was objectivity. And then thereafter, I knew how important local news is to people. And those who don't watch local news do not have the opportunity to really contribute to their community, to participate in the community today and the community what it's going to be tomorrow. And I wish, you know, it takes a half an hour to watch a local newscast, and everybody should. I don't know which choir I'm preaching to. I know that a lot of folks are, well, this is exclusively on the internet. And a lot of people these days get their news from the internet.
Well, there's no sense. What I think what you're saying, and if I may, it added to the sense of community. These are our news people telling us our stories, stories. It's all much more, the globe is smaller now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there is no sense of this is St. Pete, this is Tampa Bay, this is Tampa, this is St. Pete, Clearwater. This is what's happening here now. It's all happening on a global level.
Yeah, the world's gotten so much smaller now with the advent. Oh, years and years and years ago, PBS, WEDU, it was WEDU, came around and interviewed myself and all the anchors at all the stations in town. And everybody was expressing concern about the advent of cable news, how it was going to water down the industry. And I was the only one who said, hey, all the more places for me to work, you know, because it used to be three TV stations in town that had a newscast, maybe four if TOG was 44 was doing a newscast.
Yeah.
But now suddenly there were thousands of places to be able to do what I did for a living. So I thought that was a good thing. I can't say as I'm too pleased with how these newscasts at these various stations have evolved. Cronkite was famed for his objectivity. Yeah. Some people questioned his comment when he came back from Vietnam after the Tet Offensive, but he was just, that was how the perception was about our involvement in Vietnam. And that's the only time he really expressed an opinion, I think, in his entire career.
Yeah.
Other than when he was in a foxhole over in Germany during World War II and expressed an opinion about all the bullets that were coming his way.
Right, right. Well, I we're actually at the end, but I'd like to kind of carry that into the end by saying you retired in 2007. Was it like not a moment too soon? It's getting too, it's our regrets. How do you feel about it these days?
I miss having the venue, but now thanks to Peace. Well, I've never stopped doing this though. I've been freelancing, doing stories throughout all of my alleged retirement, but I'm kind of excited about Peace Vision because now I've got a venue I can count on. If I knock out an environmental story, and primarily it'll be environmental stories, I've got a place to show it because it's like if you weave a hat and you have no head to put it on, what's the sense in weaving a hat? Well, what's this? It's kind of anticlimactic to go out and put all the effort it takes into shooting a story and researching and all that, and not have a place to show it, people to see.
When I started with the St. Pete Catalyst, I'd been a journalist for 35 years and kind of stopped doing it because the whole situation had changed, and now I have this, and we're copacetic. Bill, if that's what you want to do, we value it, and I love that. It's nice to have an outlet. Tell me what that place is called where your stuff is appearing now. You just told me.
Peace Vision. Peace Vision. It's peacevision.com.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure is the website. And the guy behind it, John Bafar, was my intern at Channel 8 in 1977.
Wow.
That's we've gone on assignments. He was with me on the Bounty. We've gone on.
Yeah, that's where I know that name. Sure.
Yeah, we've gone on assignments all over the world together. Ever since his first job after interning and graduating from USF was to go to Wink TV down here in the Fort Myers market. Mm-hmm. And even though he was working for a CBS station, and I'm working at an NBC station, the Bounty and other stories we went on together, we would go together. We would take our film and then transfer it to video. He'd have his raw footage and the video to work from. I have mine. And we were able to be more productive because we had two cameramen that way. Mm-hmm. And we were sharing the costs of the production as well. And here I am. He's launched Peace Vision and he's given me a permanent position to show my wares, so to speak.
So, you don't miss the sort of local news beat. And I imagine you still have a lot of friends up here in Tampa, St. Pete.
When I first was coming back from my ranch in Colorado, I thought I'd come back to Tampa Bay and Apollo Beach, but the reason simply because I wanted to be on the water.
Yeah.
But then I realized I had Long John, that's his nickname, he's 6'8", John Bafar. Long John, his production company is down here in Fort Myers, and I knew I would be working hand in glove with him much more so than before. So that's why I came down here, not to mention the fact that the house I'm living in here was 25% less expensive than it would have been up in Tampa Bay. That's
the realities of life in Tampa Bay. We are just at the end, but I want to ask you, Kinship Productions is your company, and you have a website, which is kinshipproductions.com.
Right.
K-I-N-S-H-I-P, Kinship, which is the name of your, you still have Kinship?
No, Kinship was stolen and wrecked in 1991. I had her for 23 years.
Wow.
It's probably the only time you've ever seen a eulogy on TV for a boat. I'll send it to you.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to see that. Our guest tonight has been Bob Height, 30 years with WFLA and one of the most respected people in local news and area news, and a great cinematographer. And we will put all kinds of links in this video when you next see it. The YouTube version will come out tomorrow. The other one will be out tonight. Tomorrow on the Catalyst Sessions, John Collins of the St. Petersburg Arts Alliance. Good old John. And I want to just say thank you again, Bob Height. This has been a real pleasure. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Thank you, Bill. And I'm looking forward to getting to know you better.
Yeah, buddy. Next time you're in town, you know how to find me.
I do indeed.
Well, my best to John. I remember John being so tall from Passage to Panama with his feet sticking off the end of the bed.
Right. Well, like I used to say on Channel 8, smooth sailing, Bill.
Good night, my friend. Take care.
Aye, aye. Good night.